political and economic studies, and Mel Foote from the Constituency for Africa. There will also be an open mic for you and the audience to share your assessment of Trump and the way forward. For further information, IBW21.org. That's IBW21.org.
Are you in the process of writing or updating your will, trust, or estate plan? We invite you to consider adding WPFW as a beneficiary through a charitable bequest. Bequests can take many forms and are usually the largest and most impactful gift a donor will ever make. Your bequest will help to ensure the programming WPFW has provided for almost 50 years will continue into the future. More info available by email at plannedgiving@wpfw.org or by phone at 202-588-0999, extension 344. Or you can let us know you've already included PFW in your plans through those same channels so we can add your name to our growing list of legacy listeners. We are listener supported. We are Jazz and Justice. And because of your support, we are WPFW.
I'm Candy Shannon, and you are tuned to Member Supported WPFW, Washington.
To turn it around.
Glory, glory, hallelujah.
Glory, glory, hallelujah. Glory, glory, hallelujah. As we go marching on, we are calling the Yankee soldiers who enlisted for the war. We are fighting for the Union. We are fighting for the law. The nation's a rebel father than a white man ever saw. As we go marching on, look there above the center where the flag is waving bright. We are going
to Heal DC, and I could think of no better song to introduce this topic today. Some of you may be able to guess that this coming Wednesday, April 16th, is DC Emancipation Day, a very important day that I'm learning. Many young people right here in DC do not know the history of it. We are going to be spending the hour with one of my heroes, and probably some of your heroes as well, Mr. C.R. Gibbs, who we haven't had on in a while. We need to have him on much more frequently. And I'm not sure, Chuck Hicks may be joining us as well. Good morning, Chuck, if that's you on the phone.
No, it's me, Johnny, Frank Smith.
Oh, Frank, it's you. Okay. So we have another hero with us this morning, and that is Mr. Frank Smith, who is a SNCC activist, Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, a SNCC veteran, and the founder of the African American DC Civil War Museum, what many of us consider a treasure in Washington, DC. So we will be speaking to both of these heroes this morning. Let me just quickly introduce C.R. Gibbs. He's the co-author of at least six books, frequent national and international lecturer on a range of historical topics. He wrote and narrated Sketches in Color, a 13-part series to the addition to the acclaimed PBS series, The Civil War. He founded the African History and Culture lecture series, where he presents free lectures at libraries and other places. And we need to be promoting Mr. Gibbs each time he gives one of those lectures. And I believe Mr. Gibbs, if I'm not mistaken, is a native Washingtonian. So with that said, good morning to both of you gentlemen, Mr. C.R. Gibbs. Again, we're thrilled to have both of you on here. Let's start with C.R. Gibbs. As we unfortunately know, and of course the city celebrated D.C. Emancipation Day, I think it was mostly yesterday, but C.R. Gibbs, for people who do not know, what is D.C. Emancipation Day? What is its origin, and why is it important?
Good morning, Joni. Good morning, Frank.
Good morning, C.R. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing fine, brother. I'm doing fine. The important thing that we need to understand is that one of the earliest defeats that the slave power suffered occurred in the nation's capital. That, however, did not leave out the fact that we had our own underground railroad. We had people who sacrificed their lives. The continuing story that we're always finding out things about began in D.C. And the success of emancipation in D.C. put us on a freedom road that would ultimately lead to emancipation in Maryland. It would lead to ultimately the end of slavery. But this great struggle began right here. Why here? The nation's capital. We know that there were people who fought to keep it here, who ignored entreaties from other parts of the country because they recognized the singular importance of slavery maintaining its power in the nation's capital, by which it seemed to give us and the country a national approval of this evil, horrid institution. And let me just say, all the evils, the rapes, the abuse, all of that occurred here, as well as enthralling victories, matchless courage. I'm going to give the listeners a couple of names so that they can go and look them up, so you'll be better informed about it, since, well, let's just say we have to tell the story of how we got our own freedom before Texas, before other parts of the country. That struggle was going on in the nation's capital.
And Mr. Gibbs, just also give us some dates, some years that you're talking about.
We're talking about, and I recently did a lecture on the Underground Railroad. That begins essentially when the city begins, if not before, so that we have Black folk who are using extraordinary means to get out of slavery's grief. They're coming across bridges, they're swimming across rivers, they're enduring torture in a blacksmith shop here in D.C., and also being arrested for walking down the street. For some of us, we can attest to the fact that that has not changed in that much. The mere fact that you were a Black man, woman, or child walking in the streets, not breaking the law, minding your own business, could still get you arrested by a constable in the nation's capital. D.C. had such a horrible reputation that no less than the English author Charles Dickens wrote about Black folk being accosted by the police while not doing anything except breathing while Black. No less than the book is called American Notes, for those who may be taking notes. Look it up. He was aghast that this could happen in what he called the capital of a free nation.
So take us back to the years we're talking about, and before the Civil War, when this movement really started for emancipation. And perhaps, Frank, Frank will also talk about the Civil War as well, but for people who don't have a grasp of the years.
When, what we're looking at is from the formal founding, if you will, of D.C. as the capital. I'm talking about the Residence Act of 1790, which sets forth what is essentially the meets and bounds of the city. We know that Black people, even before then, were trying to get away. We're trying to get away from slavery in Maryland and slavery in Virginia, which, of course, D.C. comes out of land from both those states. So that we had the desire for freedom. We had the unique strength. I mean, there's a story that Eber Pettit tells about how Black folk are building, retrofitting wagons. In other words, they look like they're fully loaded, but they aren't. They got folk in them. I mean, anything that they can do. And as we go along and we hear about people like Thomas Smallwood or Alethea Browning Tanner, these are, or the Cook family, these are people that we know and should know as well as we know Harriet Tubman and Sojourner Truth and other people. But the astounding thing is that these events happened here, that DC still has buildings, the standing slave mansions here. And we got a reminder of this a little bit ago when we found out that the Naval Observatory up there off Massachusetts Avenue turned out to be a former slave mansion. In fact, the second largest slave plantation in the district was, in fact, where the Naval Observatory is. And the largest was over in Anacostia. And the man that owned that was named George Washington Young. So we had, when you have the so-called blessing of Congress, when you had rich, powerful, and cruel men and women, because the second largest plantation was owned by a woman, Mrs. Barber, these people made money off of our labor, did not pay us, you know, the things that we talked about, the constant indignities to be walking down the street. We're talking about a process that began even before there was a Washington, D.C., but the focus grew harder and closer once D.C. became the nation's capital. And from that time, as one opponent says, the slave power waxed large in Washington, D.C., and grew more powerful as the time went on. So from, we'll say, 1790 on to 1862. And part of the success of this, part of that first step on the road to freedom that occurred as a result of D.C. emancipation would result in the ultimate end of enslavement with the 13th Amendment. Not a perfect freedom, but one that had been dearly fought for and whose story should much better be known.
Absolutely. You're listening to the esteemed historian C.R. Gibbs, one of our very precious treasures in the D.C. community. We need to be hearing him at least every day, especially this week. Frank Smith, do you want to add to giving listeners who may not know the what was going on before the Civil War and as we build into the Civil War, the role, of course, Black soldiers played, and then coming into D.C. emancipation?
Well, first of all, Jonah, let me say thank you for having me on and also to say that it's rare that I get in a conversation with somebody who probably knows more about this than I do. and that's the case whenever I get on with C.R. Gibbs. He's written books and he's studied these things in detail of much greater depth than I have ever, and he retains his information better than anybody I know. So I love being on with him because I love having him talk, hearing him talk about, and I'm making notes over here, C.R. I'm going to follow up with some of them when the meeting is over with because I need to know more about some of this. And but first of all, and Jonah, let me say, I know you played that song by by the Sweet Honey and the Rocks, because you know that's my favorite song.
Right yes.
There. That gets my blood. That gets my blood flowing right there when you start talking about those Civil War soldiers with that marching beat that the song has.
Yes, it's one of my favorite songs too, and Chuck as well.
I'm all right. I can get up in the morning, uh-huh. brush my teeth, and get ready to go out there and march another mile.
That's right. That's right. Right.
But now, I appreciate the way you sort of got us into this, C.R. Gibbs, because the I think some of the attraction of the nation's capital was always that, you know, the country starts out with these words like we found these truths, the preamble of the Constitution, we find these truths to be self-evident that all men and women, I presume, are created equal and endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights. And so with those lofty words, you know, I'm sure people are searching for their, you know, what does this all mean? And if there's any place where it ought to have some truth to it, it's in the capital of the United States, the home of this great nation that these people are describing in these words. And so I'm sure that people, Black people, when they came here on their own, which some of them did, and some of the runaways did, and when they were brought here, even by their slave owners, and some of them, by the way, were brought here by their owners who were writing these lofty words too, by the way, were brought to the Continental Convention by their owners when they're writing these lofty words and creating this great Constitution. And so, so we were there right from the beginning. We heard those words, we trusted them, we believed in them, we probably put some of them in our hearts and our soul and our minds, said one day we're gonna get our freedom out of this thing. So I think that made the nation's capital a special place. And it still is, by the way, especially mm-hmm. works.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to emphasize that, because I want to emphasize that to all the people who are listening now. We live in a special place. We have some duty and some obligation to keep up this fight, to try to make those words come to a reality here. As long as we stay here and we have breath in our bodies and words and our songs in our hearts, we ought to keep up this fight to make those words a reality. And so I wanted to say that this morning, because we have some, you know, there's a cloud
difficult days ahead.
There's a cloud out. There's a song about this. There's a cloud out over the ocean, and it's mm-hmm. headed this way.
Mm.
So we got to get ready. Get ready for it. Ain't no getting around that. We gotta do our duty here. And so I think the nation's got a special place, and I think that explains some of it, C.R., how we got so many activists here in the city. That's why so many people from SNCC, my Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, end up here in Washington, D.C. We have been fighting the Congress to get some of these laws passed. We see the 64 Civil Rights Act get passed. We see the 65 Voting Rights Act. We see all these congressional and executive orders to create certain things like the Department of Education. All of those things are set up to try to make these things a reality here in the country. Only now to see this great cloud roll up in here and create a disturbance for us in the moment, but we lived through these things before. We'll live through them again, and I think I want to say one more time, the nation, the oppressed nation, and I'm going to say it that way, the oppressed nation around the world, including the one in the United States, is looking to us for some leadership and for some stewardship in these great times of turmoil and trouble. So I wanted to say that.
Yes, absolutely. And in the 11 o'clock hour, we're going to be talking about a special DC Emancipation Day event we're having Wednesday. We'll hear more about it Wednesday evening, and C.R. Gibbs will be speaking there as well, because it's very important, as we're saying, for the younger generations to understand this history. So, C.R., let's go back to the Civil War. Tell us how the Emancipation Day, remind us of the years of the Civil War, and then what was the year that the D.C. Emancipation Day happened, or the history of that in terms of the time?
Well, of course, the Civil War is 1861 to 1865, but the struggle for freedom in the district, as I say, starts at the beginning, even before there is a formalized district with the Residence Act of 1790. We know that Black folk are using whatever means there are at their disposal to get out of the bosom of slavery, as some called it. And even as far back as the time when Alexandria was part of the district, Black people were physically fighting. I get this notion as I go around the city all the years I've been doing this, that somehow or another there wasn't any violence, you know, there wasn't any bloodshed. One time that comes to mind very quickly is in the summer of 1825, when in Alexandria, there was what the newspapers reluctantly called a serious riot among the Negroes. And these Black folk, and people went across the bridge, the Long Bridge from Alexandria to DC, almost as much as they do over the modern bridges. But they were fighting against what they said were dealers in slaves. Those involved marched in the streets. They shouted abusive epithets to all who dared purchase slaves. So in other words, these Black folk, I'm sure, who were from DC as well as Alexandria, they went after what they would call the traders and cultivators of the soil. And peace officers who sought to restore order were resisted violently or beaten down. We have this idea, for those who might have looked at the history, that somehow or another, there was no fighting in DC. There was no risk in DC. And that would not be true. Not only do we have the fracas in 1825, which, let me point out very clearly, the most of the brothers and sisters got arrested. Their anger just could not be contained. But this is what most of the newspapers in DC and Alexandria did. When in the editor of the Phoenix Gazette, an Alexandria newspaper, thought the whole affair was of so contemptible and unimportant a nature that he decided not to trouble the public with the history of it. And we know this was often done. When we were lucky to have a passage in a letter during the War of 1812, when Black folk decided they weren't that crazy about the Americans, but the British were offering freedom. So we went and fought with the British. The United States did not automatically have any moral imperative because they were trying to enslave us as well. But since the Union Jack was flying over our hopes for freedom, we fought anywhere freedom beckoned is where we went. Let's not get it twisted. So during the War of 1812, they got the British authorities, the Americans got nervous when they heard that Black people were planning revolts in Georgetown and in Washington. You won't hear that anyplace else, because it seems as though some people are nervous when we tell people, yeah, it didn't just happen in Georgia and Mississippi and Alabama, but right on your front doorstep, in streets that you know, places that you may have been in. And the American general, Tobias Stansbury, claimed that if they didn't do something about these Negroes, they were going to attack the women in D.C. And so they turned their guns toward Black people who were planning a revolt in D.C. rather than the British were marching to take the district. And they considered Black folk who wanted their freedom. And again, the American general, so those of you who may be taking notes, his name was Tobias Stansbury. He said, we got a greater enemy that we need to take care of with these Black people. So even though the British are marching in American territory right now, we're going to go fight these Black folk. And again, they just don't talk about it. As in the case of the summer of 1825 in Alexandria, they didn't even put complete accounts in the newspapers. They claim it didn't matter, but we know they were scared enough that it did. There were people who swore And I think it was Davy Crockett, of all people, who refers to the fact that anytime people saw a fire in Georgetown, they thought it was set by Black folk who wanted their freedom. So these are things that you won't hear about, but you need to know. Yes, we fought. Yes, we risked our blood, our lives. One other one that comes to mind is in the book by Eber Pettit on his Tales of the Underground Railroad. They talk about how they took a brother and took him into a blacksmith shop. Now, I know that young folk don't know what a blacksmith shop is, but that's where you get your horses fixed, okay? And so if you went into the blacksmith shop, there, not only did they have tools, they had every kind of tool you could think of. But in this case, with this young brother, they thought he had information on the DC Underground Railroad. And so they tortured him. Mm. They tortured him in the blacksmith shop, trying to get information on the Black folks who were setting up an Underground Railroad, which at the time, many thought that the first consistent terminus of one leg of the Underground Railroad in this region started in DC. And we hadn't even got to Thomas Smallwood. So just to give you an example, we risked our lives, we risked our fortunes, our families to get to freedom's doorstep. And for a time, that included Washington, DC. So if you don't know about these places, if you don't know about these names, if you never heard of Thomas Smallwood, if you don't know who Alethea Browning Tanner was, take the time. You can party anytime. I'm just going to say it. You can party anytime. But there's history. There's a story of courage, the part of which folks like Frank are still trying to get you to understand. We fought. We risked everything. Put that Union blue on. And even now, I don't think the children could write four lines in a paragraph on it because they're not getting it. Not their fault. But we have to do a much better job of telling our own story. After all, who should be able to tell it better?
Absolutely. You're listening to the esteemed C.R. Gibbs, historian and a precious treasure in our community, talking about the history in this country of how this is nothing new that Black people are gunned down in the streets and you know, what we're facing now, we need to understand this history. And we're glad that Frank Smith is also with us, the founder of the African American Civil War Museum, SNCC activist. And I want to ask both Frank and Mr. Gibbs, we have an esteemed ancestor, Harry Jones, who worked with both of you and was on this show many times. Harry Jones always talked about the secret, and I forget what he called it, but basically he was saying that there were underground meetings with hundreds or large numbers of Black people actually organizing around before the Civil War started. And they would meet, and I know he always said they met on 14th Street and many other places. But C.R., what would you have to say about organizing that Black people were doing prior to the Civil War?
We have a sterling example of it in the case of the Pearl. I mean, can you imagine without the internet, without telephones, they were able to get 70 people to meet down at the wharf to go on board a ship and to sail out of DC's harbor? Yes, that took countless meetings, and this wasn't the only one of its kind. There were other organizations that focused on freedom. But for those who might be familiar with the DC waterfront, please go down and take a look, walk along the DC waterfront, or go to, I think it's 1705 Duke Street in Old Town Alexandria. Again, remember, Alexandria was part of the district in its early history. And there is now a beautiful statue called the Pearl in honor of the largest mass escape attempt by water in the history of the Underground Railroad. And that, again, that's part of, we're talking in the 1840s, a turbulent time in the history of the city, but it shows you how Black people were coming together, Black men and women organizing, meeting, strategizing. And in the example of the Pearl, you can go to a wonderful statue, again, in the 1700 block of Duke. Don't worry about the 1700 block of Duke. It's across the street from Whole Foods. So I know I've just given you a landmark. So, you know, if you go up Duke Street, you see the Whole Foods. Don't forget now. Stop, get out, make sure you park safely, because there's a brick building next to the statue that I want you to know. This is one of the last former slave pens in this area. Okay, one of the last former slave pens. So you'll get a chance within the space of a couple of yards to see the beautiful statue in honor of the Pearl Affair, 1848. The brick structure next to it, former slave pen, and then want to go in and get something to eat? Well, that's up to you, but you got the Whole Foods right across the street. So
what was the outcome? Explain what happened. What was the final outcome of the Pearl?
The final outcome of the Pearl is that these freedom seekers were captured. They were returned to the district, and several were sold, including people whose ancestors still live in the DMV today, including. So this is, it's not a game. You don't always win every time you try, but we tried and we kept trying. Aunt Mary Dine sneaked across one of the bridges to DC during the Civil War. She wound up singing for Lincoln at the soldier's home, but she had been brutally abused in St. Mary's County and in Charles County even before that. But she was determined to be free. And so she was able to get passage hidden in a wagon across most likely the Long Bridge, but there were a couple of others. And this incredible woman made a name for herself with a voice that must have come by way of the angels, Aunt Mary Dines, and there's information on her right at the soldier's home. So we have these things. I'll leave y'all to consider why we don't know more about these people that risked everything for freedom. But now you have on that list I gave you Thomas Smallwood, I gave you Aletha Browning Tanner, who owned a farm in Anacostia. And we have Aunt Mary Dines, who again risked it all after being beaten and misused and saying freedom is the only option I'm considering. And now, how did she do it? She got in one of those wagons, the retrofitted wagons, came across the bridge. And the chroniclers at the time tell us that she was able to get up on Capitol Hill, have Blacks who stood together. Don't ever tell your children Black people never stick together. The Underground Railroad, the Civil Rights Movement, which Frank Smith can attest to. There have been wonderful, trying, but at the same time, beautiful attempts, successfully in many cases, to show that Black people will stick together. Don't tell your children that poison, because first of all, it ain't true. We were not perfect. We had personal issues with one another. You know, sometimes egos don't always come together. They don't fit perfectly. But when it comes to the main target, when it comes to that, we were able to change the course of history in the nation's capital and across the country and definitely in the South. So this is what we celebrate during DC Emancipation.
And again, you're listening to the esteemed C.R. Gibbs, a hero, historian in our community. This is To Heal D.C. and WPFW. And we're with Frank Smith as well, the African-American Civil War Museum. Before the show, this hour is ended, we want to make sure I ask the question, what should young people learn for the challenges today that we're facing? But before we get to that, I wanted to ask both Frank and CR, Is it true that there was a lot of organizing going on underground right there on 14th Street, as Harry Jones always told us?
They were 14th Street, 15th Street, I mean, almost any place that Black people could safely congregate without police. And let me just hit it with that. Yes, I mean, there churches, basements, lofts, we were all organizing any place we could. And oftentimes the locations would have to be changed, because you have to understand that there were people. One quick story. Imagine yourself in a carriage. I know that's a big stretch, but you're on what is now Georgia Avenue, and you come to the intersection. I know some of you must have done this, the intersection of Georgia and Eastern. Mm-hmm. Well, on a summer's night, August of 1850, there is a white man in a carriage who is an abolitionist. He has two brothers in the carriage. They are trying to get out of the district. As they cross into Maryland, somebody throws a fence rail into the back wheels of the carriage, obviously with obvious results. I mean, the carriage stops. The man on the who's driving the carriage is pulled down off the seat. Guns are pulled on him. There are people who have become so filled with bloodlust that they shoot into the coach and stab their knives into the coach. They want these two Black prisoners. And the only thing they're guilty of is fighting for freedom. But this is I'm happy to say, now I'll compress the story, that if you go to the intersection of Georgia and Eastern, there is a small wayside exhibit on which you can pull up into Jessup Blair Park and take a look at, so that you can see what these people were doing in trying to steal our freedom. God gives you freedom. Man might try to take it away, but we used our natural human desire for freedom and justice and equality given to all of us at birth. Some people try to break the laws, but we kept fighting. We did not let that stop us. And what Frank and SNCC and the other organizations did in those days was a further step down the hallway to full freedom. We're not there yet. We can't park in front of the parking space for that, but we're on the road. And yes, that road, children, you have to understand, and I've had kids say this to me, well, but I thought Dr. King did what he could for his time. Children, you must do for your time. History is a bridge that goes from the past to the present. We go over to the past to learn the lessons that our ancestors left for us. We come back across that bridge to apply the lessons of the past to the problems of today. So it's, and it ain't over. As a certain well-known singing group used to say, it ain't over. It's your generation's time, children. You don't get a chance to put your feet up and say, oh, well, the hard work was done. We don't have to do anything except read about it in the book. No, it is your time to write a new chapter in the struggle for freedom, justice, and equality.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of young people are ready to do that, but they also need to hear you and learn this history. I wanted to just mention one of the things that Harry Jones used to do was take WPFW members on tours of the Underground Railroad locations and things like that. And Mr. Gibbs and Frank, maybe we can figure out a way to resurrect that idea of giving tours of where these Underground Railroads were right here in the nation's capital.
Let me just think, now that we're talking about tours, I've done two this year. I did one recently where I took a group of about 35 people to Louisiana and Mississippi. It was called Civil War to Civil Rights. We not only visited places where these African-American soldiers fought on battlefields in Natchez, Mississippi, by the way, that slave pen that you talked about in Alexandria, Dr. Gibbs, those enslaved persons were being trafficked down south, and there were traffic from there down to a slave pen in New Orleans. Armfield and whatever that other guy's name is that I always forget because he was such a cruel and brutal slave trader. Armfield and Franklin, they ended up often in slave pens in Natchez, Mississippi. So we toured that place and then went up to the Mississippi Delta, the Emmett Till's place and whatever. And then just last weekend, I took a group of 35 people from Washington, D.C. to Appomattox, Virginia. What happened in Appomattox? That's where this war, Civil War, finally ended. Robert E. Lee is surrounded up there, and they have a display up there that says that in his last encounter, Robert E. Lee, the Confederate leader, legendary Robert E. Lee, Lee High School was named after him down there, and all this other Lee stuff, Highway 50 going out south is Lee Highway. Robert E. Lee actually surrendered to a regiment, to the 41st USCT, 41st United States Colored Troops Regiment, which was actually enrolled in Pennsylvania. This is a story about this war that nobody ever told. We brought this story out. Up until we started working on this 10 or 15 years ago, the National Park Service had nothing in that Appomattox courthouse and that Appomattox battlefield about involving any African-American soldiers. This is Jesse Jackson once says, history sometimes becomes his story. They tell their story and they leave your story out. Well, it's time for us to get our story in the middle of these stories now, because our young people need to know that we fought for our freedom and that we were able to obtain many of our own civil rights that got us out of slavery and got us on the road to freedom, which we enjoy today. And make no mistake about it, the African-American community has made an awful lot of progress here in the United States of America. We probably got more doctors and lawyers and teachers and preachers than any other Black community in the world. We've got over 100 historically Black colleges, millions of Black people going to what were PWIs, predominantly white schools when I was coming up in Georgia. Some of those schools now are predominantly Black schools because African-Americans worked hard to take care of our family, raise our children, educate them. We believe in education as a tool for freedom, to retain and sustain our freedom. And we have to keep those goals in front of us as we go through these battles that we're looking at today.
Yes. And let me just, because we're going to have about 10 minutes left or so, and I want to just ask Mr. Gibbs, and then we're going to also talk about what the young people should know today, what your advice for them is right now. But CR, explain exactly the date of DC Emancipation Day or the time and what happened around that time. I know I've seen pictures and things like that, but tell our listeners who don't know.
Yes, we're talking about April 16th, 1862. We know our ancestors regarded this day, which understand, want to emphasize this, we're talking, the city essentially gets going 1790, 1800, it becomes the official capital. From that time, Black people are struggling, and before, Black people are struggling for their freedom. So we're not saying, oh, well, they did this in one day. We're talking about decades of struggle. We're talking about decades of risking your life, of people getting hurt, of people getting killed, of people unjustly executed or incarcerated. So we're looking at that time between 1800 in round figures, 1862. Now, this would result in the freedom of about 3,000 people. It's still risky because, remember, Virginia's still a slave state. Maryland is still a slave state until when? I know somebody within the sound of my voice must know about November 1st, 1864. That's when slavery ended in the state of Maryland. But between 1864 and 1862, you could not be certain, even if you made it to DC, that they would not send bounty hunters to come and drag you back. We know about Black women who were beaten with trace chains. These are those chains you sometimes see in the wagons to connect the wagon to the horse and harness. They were beaten with trace chains because, again, they wanted to be free. And this magnificent story an integral part of a human struggle to chart your own destiny, call your own shots, to modify it, modernize it. These need to be told. And from that time, let's say 60 years of struggle in the district for DC emancipation, how can we take another step without going and knowing what our ancestors endured? Because it was against the law for 10 or more people to gather, Black people to gather on the street corner in Georgetown. People go to Georgetown, Black people spend cash money, but they don't know the history. We're proud that city and Georgetown University, which was a slaveholding institution, is seeking to turn things right. But understand, before things could be turned right, they were wrong a long time.
And they're still too wrong right now. So let's with the time remaining, and I know it's a big task, we have, of course, a crisis right here in the nation's capital again. The president is threatening to take over D.C., the so-called president, and federal workers are being fired. Many of the agencies are being shut down. Again, we have a gathering Wednesday evening at the Metropolitan AME Church, where some of the young people will be speaking. But what would you, I'm going to ask both Frank and C.R. Gibbs, what is some of the advice and wisdom you want to give to the young people who are committed to fight but don't know this history?
Well, I'll stand down and let Frank drop his wisdom.
Okay. Well, first of all, I think it's important for us to recognize, and this is one of the reasons why I started African American Civil War Museum in the first place, Memorial Museum. I went to the archives, pulled all these names of these Black soldiers out, put them up in public. You don't even have to go inside to see them. They're right outside. You can go up there day or night. People come out there and pray, and they come out there and preach. They come out there and sing. Mm. They do all kinds of things, which I enjoy watching sometimes. There's a theater going on out there. So some things have to be done in public like that. And added to that, one more thing. One of the things that we'll be doing tomorrow, Wednesday at 11 o'clock at the African American Civil War Memorial, I have a group of people who are coming up there. We read these names out loud of these 3,100 people who were freed as part of D.C. Emancipation Day. Now, that what happened on D.C. Emancipation Day, a transaction took place, a business transaction took place. There was a buying and selling of enslaved people. Mm. Those enslaved people were Black. For a commercial transaction to take place, there had to be a willing buyer and a willing seller. So how did that happen? Well, the federal government, the Congress authorized the president to set up a scheme where they would come up with a list of names of enslaved people in the District of Columbia. They went to the owners and said, if you don't get these people out of here by a certain time, we are going to free the ones that are here. And the process of freedom is we will pay you for the ones that are here. So there was a great skirting around. Some people took the enslaved people out. Some people brought some of them back. Some of them, you know, had old people they couldn't get anything for. They had children. They had so that was a list of 3,100 made up. And then they went to Baltimore and found a man who actually appraised livestock. And then that man went down that list and put a number next to each one of those names. One person $300, one person $500, one person $700. And some people had zero next to their name. Now, I want to describe this a little bit for people because this is an awesome process. We repeat this. We read those names out, tell people how much they paid for these people. And people, on the morning of, CR, I'm sure you know this, on the morning of, people didn't know if their name was going to be on this list or not. So there's a great awakening on the morning of. People come running out of their houses to go find this list to see if their name was up there, if they were going to be freed in this process. If not, they were going to be remanded back to slavery and spend the rest of their life until the Civil War starts. And so we read these names out loud because we think this is a way of paying dignity to those people and calling their names to let them know that we understood their suffering, we understood their caring. We are still carrying on this fight now to make sure that African Americans are free everywhere, all over the world, all across the globe. And not only are we free, but we're also helping other people to get freedom too.
Absolutely. And remember, none of us are free until all of us are free.
Amen. So, amen.
So Frank's Museum is going to be reopening on July 18th of this year, which just happens to be Nelson Mandela's birthday. But we're going to be reminding you of that throughout the coming months. That's going to be a very exciting moment. So C.R. Gibbs, as young people, and there are a lot of young people in the D.C. area that are really committed to, they are organizing, they're concerned, they're mobilizing, but they don't know the history. How would you put into words some of the history that they need to understand as they're walking through these, you know, they are frightening times now. So what would you have to say? And again, people can come out not only to Frank's Museum Wednesday morning at 11, but to the Metropolitan AME Church Wednesday evening from 6 to 9, and some of these issues will be discussed. But CR, what would you say to young people or the lessons?
I would say that they have to become invested in their own history. It's almost criminal that they have not been told about the incredible story of resistance and renewal that occurred right under their own feet. And with that, I'm also going to mention that the next free lecture I do at the Woodridge Library, which will be Tuesday, April 15th, is called The Whirligig of Slavery, The Strange Life and Times of Solomon Northup. Solomon Northup. You probably haven't heard of him, but if you come to the Woodridge Library, not Woodbridge now, I'm not saying go way out to Virginia, Woodridge, okay, 18th and Rhode Island Avenue at 6 o'clock, you'll learn what in the earth is a whirligig, but the lecture is called The Whirligig of Slavery, The Strange Life and Times of Solomon Northup. You got to know this, and you have to put the seat of the pants to the seat of the chair and study this history and find out where your family's history may fit in. There are descendants of people who went through DC emancipation that are still here. At the time, many of them got certificates. I have a picture of one man whose family kept his certificate. So, and remember, if you don't remember anything else about DC emancipation, it is, as Frank said, the only instance of compensated emancipation in the history of the United States. Not to mention that some of you, if the calendar turns right, you may get an extra day to do your taxes. But that's a story for another time.
Let's make sure the public understands. It is the slave owner who's being compensated on DC compensated Emancipation Day. The slaves themselves were not compensated for all that years that their labor was taken from them, and before they were freed. So they are still owed their compensation. Now we call that reparations now, but that's compensation. It was the owner who was being paid that money whatever the federal government paid over $3 million to the owners to get them to release. As I told you, you got a seller and a buyer. The seller had to agree, and the buyer had to compensate him. And so it was the slave owner who was being compensated.
It was the slave owner who was being compensated. We didn't want to, I don't want to mislead anyone. I understand that it was a transaction and that we weren't supposed to stay here once this transaction was completed. Lincoln was at that time in favor of colonization, basically sending Black folk out of this country, any place else that he could. And these are aspects. If you dip your toes into the waters of the history of DC emancipation, you'll find that the ripples go far out into the history of this country and indeed the world. This is a holiday that has local, national, and international significance.
Absolutely. And people talk a lot about Juneteenth, which was, what year was that?
1865.
So this D.C. Emancipation Day was 3 years before Juneteenth. So many argue, and I know, I think Harry Jones used to do that, that it really should be D.C. Emancipation Day. That should be the national holiday.
Indeed. But,
so thank you so much, both of you. And again, you can come out and hear C.R. Gibbs in person this Wednesday at the Metropolitan AME Church. Frank, you're welcome to come too. And that is from 6
to
9.
I'll be there, Joni. You come to mine, I'll come to yours.
Okay.
And don't forget mine on the Tuesday, April 15th at 6 o'clock at the Woodridge Library,
but guess
18th
what?
And Rhode Island Avenue.
Guess what, C.R.? If you can come on again next week and remind people, that would be even better. But we're going to try to get it out on some of the PFW calendars to make sure that it's announced.
Thank you.
Again, the esteemed C.R. Gibbs, who, and as he says, you know, it's no accident that young people do not know this vital information. It's deliberate. It's a deliberate part of this system that they do not want to teach how Black people and other people organized for years towards freedom. So that's not anything you're going to learn in school, especially not now. I know I certainly didn't learn it in school. So again, this is the week of DC Emancipation Day on Wednesday. In addition to the dancing and the parades and the fireworks, we need to learn the history. So come out on Wednesday morning at 11 to the African American Civil War Museum and come to the Metropolitan AME Church on 15th and M Wednesday night from 6 to 9. Thank you, Magic Mike, and thanks again, CR. And we will be doing a second hour in a few minutes with Reverend Lamar with the Metropolitan AME Church. I would have loved to have you on for 2 hours, Mr. Gibbs, but we're happy to get you for the hour. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Joni.
And thank you, CR. Thank you, Frank. Thank you, Magic Mike. We're going to go out with Frank's favorite song and probably CR's as well.
Amen, sister. Amen.
Absolutely.
So let's hear it.
Greetings, family. This Wednesday, April 16th, friends, neighbors, and comrades from all across the Washington area will assemble at Metropolitan AME Church for a D.C. Emancipation Day speak out to strategize, organize, and mobilize from 5:30 until 9 p.m. The event, Standing Together to Fight the Power, presented by the Metropolitan Washington Council, AFL-CIO, and the Federal Unionist Network, together with Harriet's Wildest Dreams, Free DC, The Washington Informer, and WPFW, will center how the community can protect DC home rule, save federal jobs and services, and support the city's most vulnerable neighborhoods. Metropolitan AME Church is located at 1518 M Street Northwest in DC. Details at wpfwfm.org and freedcproject.org. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
WPFW presents Still We Rise, our 48th anniversary celebration on Friday, April 25th. 7 to 11 p.m. at Martin's Crosswinds in Greenbelt. Entertainment includes Navasha Deya and more. That's Still We Rise, WPFW's 48th anniversary celebration. Details at wpfwfm.org.